This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States. And this afternoon, his challenger, Democrat Hillary Clinton, conceded her loss in a speech in New York.
Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead. Our constitutional democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power. And we don't just respect that. We cherish it.
Clinton also had a special message for her legions of young volunteers.
This loss hurts, but please never stop believing that fighting for what's right is worth it.
A short while later, at the White House Rose Garden, President Barack Obama picked up on that theme, telling all young people, don't be cynical, don't think you can't make a difference.
The point, though, is that we all go forward with a presumption of good faith in our fellow citizens. Because that presumption of good faith is essential to a vibrant and functioning democracy.
Obama says he has invited Donald Trump to the White House tomorrow to begin talks on a successful transition of power. Well, President-elect Trump, in his victory speech during the earliest hours of this morning, also struck a conciliatory chord.
To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people.
Well, it was a history-making election, and we're going to talk with a lot of folks about it today, beginning with one of Donald Trump's deepest Massachusetts supporters, Lou Murray. He was a Trump delegate at the Republican National Convention, and he joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So how are you feeling today?
Very tired and very happy.
Yeah.
I was going to come in wearing my Trump gear, Make America Great Again hat, and my Trump sweatshirt, my hoodie. And I said, nope, you know what? Today is a day for us to come together. I didn't want to give your newsroom a case of the vapors. So I said, today is a day to be magnanimous and say, hey, we have to all come together and unify for the country and for the good of the country. And I've been on the losing side of elections. I know there's a lot of Hillary Clinton supporters that are listening. And I want to say, to quote Bill Clinton, I feel your pain. I've been there. And, you know, was a really good, hard-fought battle. And I look forward to, you know, working with you to make the country better.
So you wrote an op-ed in the Boston Globe back in July predicting then that Donald Trump was going to win. I mean, what did you see then that a lot of folks didn't?
I actually wrote it in May.
In May.
It took the Globe a long time to write it. You know, Marjorie had some issues that came out in the email leaks where she wanted to coordinate coverage for other people but ignore some other candidates. But that's the Globe. But what I saw is that the American people, they're deep down, they're, the things that they cared about, illegal immigration, the trade agreements, and Chinese currency manipulation that were ripping their jobs and their businesses from their communities, they were fed up. And it struck a chord, that kind of populist nationalism that Trump was talking about, coupled with some of his conservative ideologies that he had adopted, like cleaning up Washington and corruption. Mm-hmm. I think those were themes that played very, very well across Democratic, Independent, and Republican neighborhoods.
Yeah. So you've got, if you could sum up the election in a couple of words, in four words, you've got a special set. What would they be?
Well, I'm a big believer in knocking on doors and standing out at polling places to talk to people, and because you can see things happening. And yesterday I was on the legal team for the Trump campaign in southern New Hampshire, where I grew up and went to high school, elementary and high school. And I looked at the voters coming in. You know, they had a lot of greasy Carhartt jackets and work boots and grease under their fingernails and reflective jackets and union jackets and a lot of other gear on. And I said, we had a game with the other people that were there observing. And I said, Mossy Oak, Trump wins. Mossy Oak is camouflage wear. It's like, you see it today. It's very popular, very fashionable, but it's also work gear that people wear. And there was a lot of Mossy Oak hats, a lot of hunting shirts, and Mackinac jackets. And I said, these are not Hillary Clinton voters.
Right, and they were coming to the polls.
That's right. Big time.
So come January 20th, when President-elect Trump is sworn in, what is the first thing you'd like to see him do?
Well, that's a good question. One of the things that I would like to see him do is do what he has been doing, which is reaching out to all of the people. I mean, he's the first Republican president ever to hoist a rainbow flag and wave it around. He's also the first Republican president to get the majority of the Catholic vote since Dwight Eisenhower, And so that may seem incongruous to some people, but I'd like to see him go to work on the things that really matter to people, which is jobs, jobs, jobs. And those things, jobs, job creation and job preservation, can be handled in three issues: getting rid of one-sided trade deals and renegotiating them, Chinese currency manipulation, and addressing illegal immigration. Now, what I said in my op-ed was that Mr. Trump is not against legal immigration. His mother was an immigrant. She was an Irish speaker from the Isle of Lewis in Scotland. And he just wants to see the fact that, if you bring in illegal immigrants, that means American citizens are getting undercut for jobs at the lowest level of our society. And those people deserve a good job at a good wage.
Well, finally, Lou, we started our conversation with you saying, it's time for America to come together. And I'm just wondering how much of a challenge you think that's going to be because, for example, Donald Trump earned just 8% of the votes from African-American voters, 29% of the Latino vote. Hillary Clinton won 88% of the black vote, 65% of the Latino vote. Whereas, of course, as we know, Donald Trump won the majority of the white vote. Hillary Clinton won the majority of the non-white vote. So there seems to be a really huge divide in this country, which won't be easy to overcome, especially given how, as you know, contentious and rancorous election was.
I would say, Meg, don't give in to historical fatalism. One thing happened this morning at about 2 o'clock when Donald Trump came onto the stage. The rally Donald Trump had suddenly been transformed into the president Donald Trump. And his whole tone and tenor and the people that he was surrounding himself with and his gestures had all changed. Now, you have to do certain things to win a presidential election. And in this year, you had to be the loud, brash, nationalist populist. Now, to be a great president, you have to do a whole bunch of other set of characteristics. And I think you'll see Donald Trump revert to the business persona of Donald Trump and bring people together.
So, it's absolutely possible that a transformation could occur, but you got to know, and understand that because of the rhetoric of the campaign, I feel like a lot of people are saying they're actually scared right now.
Well, you know who's scared, Meg? I'll tell you who's scared. The people that were called racist, xenophobic, nativist, deplorable, homophobic, isolationist, vulgar. I think so. On both sides, there were a lot of rhetoric,
Yeah.
And, those were just the things that Charlie Baker said about us.
Well, Lou Murray is an insurance salesman, and he was a Trump delegate at the Republican National Convention, joining us today to talk about his reactions to Donald Trump's historic win of the presidency last night. Mr. Murray, thank you so very much. Hope to see you again.
I hope you have me in again.
We'll most definitely do so.
Thanks.
Well, we're taking stock of last night's historic presidential election with many local political leaders today, and we also want to hear from you listeners. What do you think about the election of Donald Trump as the 45th president of the United States? Where do you want the nation to go from here? And as you just heard in our conversation with Lou Murray, how do you think these two very disparate sides can come together? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Well, let's turn now to Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. He joins us on the line. Mayor Walsh, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today.
All right. So you heard what Lou Murray had to say. You were an early supporter of Hillary Clinton. Your reaction to the outcome?
I think people in this country are angry. I think a lot of anger is really misguided towards the presidential election, but really is focused from the inability of Congress and Senate to act on a national scale in Washington. It shows you that our country, we do have some deep divisions in our country, and that there's a lot of work that has to happen to close that deep divide. And I think that, I do hope that Donald Trump can address some of this. Secretary Clinton today mentioned that in her speech for Democrats to really try and work with the new president and see if we can close some of those divides. But it's going to be difficult. I think that that's something that you mentioned to the previous caller about concerns that people have. People are scared today. People are scared about immigration. They're scared about their jobs. They're scared about their future. They're scared about their country. And I think that, Donald Trump will have to act quickly, lay out a plan very early on to show that he truly is open and inclusive for everyone.
Do you think that a Trump presidency or the Trump presidency could have an impact on Massachusetts or Boston? I mean, I'm seeing today that he's sort of laid out many of the executive actions he's going to want to take on his first few days in office, including canceling all federal funding to sanctuary cities. That could have an impact on in Massachusetts.
I think that, again, that sides on the side that goes on the side of hate, and I think that. His first 100 days should be focused on an agenda to move the country forward. That doesn't move the country forward. I think that, some of the impacts that we could have is through different federal funding. I'm concerned about the Supreme Court and the rulings the Supreme Court will make. Boston's a unique city. Boston leads the way in a lot of different ways, and we're going to continue to lead the way regardless who the president of the United States is, with our health care and our tech companies and our education facilities and all of the things that we're working on in our communities, the development we have, the housing, all the different things we're doing, we're going to still be a city that's welcoming to everyone.
Well, Mayor Walsh, I know we've only got you for another minute here, so I just want to ask you quickly. So question five passed for Boston, Community Preservation Act. Question two, the charter schools question did not pass. I'd love to talk to you about that at some other time, but I wanted to ask you about question four, and that's marijuana legalization, because you were strongly opposed to it. It has passed in Massachusetts. So what would you like to see as next steps taken as we move towards forming the commission, first of all?
We're working on that right now inside City Hall to see how the ballot question is written and what exactly it means for the city of Boston. At first glance of the question and we've been talking about, it means up to at least 48 pot shops in the city of Boston in the first year. So, people in the communities that supported this will also have to accept that there'll be pot shops in their neighborhood selling marijuana and selling the edibles down the street from schools and different places like that. There's not a lot we can do with that. I know that the voters in Massachusetts a few years ago legalized medical marijuana, and we're having a very difficult time trying to site medical marijuana facilities. This we have less leeway, and it's something that we have to try and figure out as we move forward here. So there's still a lot of unanswered questions that I have even about the law and what it means and how it gets implemented. So we'll be working with the governor and the legislature and coming up with some ideas on what this means and how it means, what it means for the city of Boston.
Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, always great to have you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Well, we are taking stock of last night's historic presidential election, its impact on the country, and its impact on Massachusetts. You can call us because I want to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're going to be talking to a lot of voices this hour. You can also send us a tweet as well. We're at Radio Boston. Let's get some of you guys in here right now. Alex is calling from Medford. You're on the air, Alex.
Hi, I'd just like to point out that as a Democrat, I'm really not as worried about the Trump presidency as some of my fellow party members for two parts. One, I do think that the tone in Donald Trump last night especially was, quite different. So hopefully that transformation into a presidential Trump happens. But even if not, and he does everything he said he's going to do, I think that those actions would galvanize a push in people to really want equality for everybody and not have it be just this mindless, oh, I want equality, but have actually something to really push against and push for.
Right.
And, even if he does stay on track to be as, divisive as he was, which I don't think is going to happen, I do think, good could come from it. because there are good people in America, and that's always going to be the case.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Alex, there. A call there for further action and maybe even empowered action. I appreciate it very much. We're going to take some more callers as we progress here, and we will talk more about the country's path forward in a moment. But I want to take a second once again to note how close America came to electing its first female president. Obviously, that did not happen last night, but we came close. Hillary Clinton herself acknowledged that in what might have been the most emotional moment in her concession speech today.
And to all the women, and especially the young women, who put their faith in this campaign and in me, I want you to know that nothing has made me prouder than to be your champion.
Well, Ellen Fitzpatrick is a professor of history at the University of New Hampshire and author of The Highest Glass Ceiling, Women's Quest for the American Presidency, and she joins us now. Professor Fitzpatrick, welcome back.
Thank you.
So react to that piece of tape we heard. I mean, that was the one moment in Clinton's concession speech today where I heard her voice waver. She must be feeling this powerfully.
Well, I'm sure she is. She belongs to a generation, as do most baby boomers, who lived through an incredible transformation in women's roles, in part as a result of the large part because of the modern women's movement. And our lives have been very different than the lives of many of our mothers. We have had opportunities and greater equality in the workplace, and also encouragement to seek opportunities that many women did not have. And yet, in American political life, there was always, this territory that had not yet been explored or inhabited, I should say, by women. That is that women have only been able to vote in the United States for less than 100 years, mm-hmm. and no woman has ever been elected to the highest office in the land.
Well, I want to talk to you for a second about what some of the exit polling may reveal to us about America's appetite for a female president, mm-hmm. because according to NPR, 24 points separates America's women from men in exit polls.
I mean,
basically, they preferred Clinton by 12 points. But you have to look a little deeper because really there's a racial component here,
yes,
as well, because
yeah.
white women actually voted for Trump 53% to 43%. So when we look at the women's vote for Clinton, we really have to look at it's women of color who may have been driving that.
It was there. That's absolutely true. And it's also true that men of color were much more supportive of Clinton and than they were of Trump. So, I mean, there's a huge divide racially in the response of white Americans, whether college educated or not, and African Americans, Latinos, and others to Donald Trump. So, yes, that's true. But there is a significant gender gap in this election, and part of it has to do with the preference of white men for Donald Trump. It's not just about the response to Hillary Clinton. It can be read the other way as mm-hmm. well.
You know, many pundits last night and today were saying that the first female president of the United States is probably watching this election right now. Do you think that's the case, or are we farther away from a woman president than that?
Oh, I think we are much farther away from a woman president. Having studied this history and looked at the over 200 women that have set their sights on the White House since Victoria Woodhull ran in 1872, I think it's pretty hard to imagine that. I think that shows a very profound lack of understanding of what it has taken women, a woman, to get within striking distance of the presidency, which Clinton did this time and did, in fact, in 2008, and what some of the obstacles have been that they have faced.
Well, Ellen Fitzpatrick is professor of history at the University of New Hampshire. She's author of The Highest Glass Ceiling, Women's Quest for the American Presidency. Professor Fitzpatrick, thank you as always.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you, listeners, so let's take another call here. Nicole is calling from Hyde Park. You're on the air, Nicole.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling because I am feeling utterly devastated for multiple reasons. I'm a child psychiatrist, and I'm also an African-American wife and mother. And I cannot tell you how many phone calls and emails and visits I've gotten from parents and children who are devastated and terrified. I have a number of patients who suffered sexual abuse, and they are using terms like feeling re-victimized and feeling unsafe as a result of a Trump presidency, because they feel like the greatest leader of our land is demonstrating lack of care for the safety of women. And then also, as an African-American mother, I don't know what this means for my children. Are they going to be safe? What rights will they have? What freedoms will we lose when a conservative Supreme Court comes into office? What's going to happen now that all branches of government are Republican? I am literally terrified every time my husband leaves the house. I don't know what this means for us.
Oh, Nicole, I mean, I know a lot of people feel probably very similar to how you're feeling. But let me ask you before we head into a break here. Hillary Clinton herself today says that our democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power and that we owe Donald Trump the open mind in terms of his chance to lead. That was what she said to all Americans today. Does any part of that give you a little hope, a little more confidence?
No, because I believe that Secretary Clinton is presidential. I do not believe that Donald Trump would have given her the same benefit of the doubt. He's never, at any point in this election, shown any openness or acceptance of other people, of other races, of other religions. Frequently, he had people thrown out of his venues that were African-American or appeared Muslim or appeared other. So I don't feel that, because he's never said that. And he's never shown that in his history as a businessman either.
Well, Nicole, thank you so very much for your call and for your sharing your story and how you're feeling right now, because we're all feeling something. Thank you so very much. We're talking about last night's historic presidential election, its impact on Massachusetts. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let us know how you're feeling. We'll be back in 60 seconds. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are taking stock of last night's historic presidential election and the path forward for the state of Massachusetts, for the nation as a whole, coming together as a whole. We're checking in with a lot of political leaders from around Massachusetts today. We want to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's listen to what Governor Charlie Baker had to say earlier today about what he sees as an optimistic future.
He said all the right things last night. Secretary Clinton said all the right things this morning. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he goes about the process of developing his team. I think that will be a statement about a lot of things. And I look forward to working with him and with his administration on a lot of the stuff that we share common interests in.
That's Governor Charlie Baker a little earlier today referring to President-elect Donald Trump. Well, joining us now is Senate President Stan Rosenberg. Senator Rosenberg, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
It's great to have you back. So what is your reaction to the outcome of last night's election?
The voters have spoken, and in our system of government, there will be some mourning and grieving among those who lost. That is, their candidate didn't make it to the finish line. But when we get past that, we have to unify and move forward. I think it will be challenging for a lot of people because, as we heard with the caller just a couple of minutes ago, a lot of things were said that were very painful for people, and it's going to take a bit of effort to get over those things. There's fear and anxiety as a result of many of those things that were said, but there's also fear and anxiety in society in general, and it's been here for a while because of income insecurity, because of the challenges that people are facing trying to find jobs that pay a living wage, that they don't have to worry about whether they're going to lose their job, whether they're going to have to sell their home or mortgage their home to support the education of their children, and whether their children are going to end up with a college debt that's going to carry them for literally decades as they try to start their own families and careers.
So, Senator Rosenberg, you supported Hillary Clinton. I'm wondering what you think her loss says about the Democratic Party as a whole. I mean, is this not a time for the party to take stock about the direction it wants to go next?
I think it's time for everybody to take stock, because this was as much a surprise for the Republican Party, I think, as it was for the Democratic Party. After all, very, very few of the national Republican leaders took Mr. Trump's side in the campaign. So I think this is a soul-searching time for everyone, because this society and this economy is changing so quickly. The demographics, the economics, we're competing now on a world stage where we used to have so much more economic power than so many other places. But now that's being shared, and it's causing dislocation in our economy. The 40, almost 50 years of concentration of wealth at the top of our system, with lower-income people and middle-income people, their standard of living stagnating. So we all have to take stock here. This isn't a Democratic problem or a Republican problem.
Well, let's take a quick call here. Joe is calling from Reading. You're on the line with Senator Stan Rosenberg. Do you agree with the senator has to say, Joe?
No. First of all, but I appreciate the senator pushing number four. I appreciate that one. But, you know, I think this is like the Whig election in the 1850s, when Lincoln finally emerged in the new Republican Party. The Whig Party was destroyed. I think the Democratic Centrist Party is gone, and rightly so. The progressive wing, extended by Bernie Sanders, clearly had all the momentum, all the excitement, all the young people, but the fix was in. Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Democratic Committee made sure that Bernie's debates were minimal and on times when nobody saw them. And they did everything they could to make sure Hillary got coronated, correct? Well, she did. And she went down the tubes, because the only person that Trump could have beaten was her. She was the worst possible candidate. So much baggage, wouldn't release her speeches,
yep.
All the email crap. Bernie Sanders had none of that.
Joe, let me just take it back from you. I take your point very much so, and I want to let Senator Rosenberg respond to that. I mean, Senator, I mean, I think Joe is feeling what very many people are feeling, that, again, it's the Democratic leadership, and Massachusetts has a major role to play, because a lot of national-level Democratic leaders come through this state or are from this state. So, you know, do you hear the inflamed passions of the Sanders wing here in terms of where the party should go next?
So I have two reactions. The first is that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump tapped into the exact same thing, but on the different ends of the ideological spectrum, because they were both speaking to the fears and the concerns of people. They did it differently, and they were appealing to different people. But the other thing is that, you know, the Democratic Party starts at our local committees, goes up to the state and up to the federal government. If you look at what's happening right here in the state house where I'm talking to you from, if you see the progressive legislation that's being put through, this is a set of ideas and policies that are seeking to move the Commonwealth forward. And if this were replicated throughout the system to this extent, I would agree with the gentleman, we would have a much more progressive voice for our country. And you just look at what the Senate put on the agenda here, from transgender rights to pay equity to the earned income tax credit increase and public records reform. All of those are very progressive ideas, and I dare say Bernie Sanders would have endorsed them all.
Mm. So I want to ask you a quick question about the Massachusetts voters and electorate itself, because, yes, Hillary Clinton carried the state. She got 60.8% of the vote, but 33.5% of Massachusetts voters, a third of them who cast a ballot yesterday, voted for Donald Trump. What's your message for them in terms of their lives here in Massachusetts?
So basically, if somebody gets 2/3 of the vote, they have had a landslide. You would never expect anyone in a competitive race of this sort to get much more than 2/3 of the vote. So the other third or so, they got to speak. Their ideas were in the mix. And as it turns out, their views are going to be represented very, very strongly, and the actions going forward are going to be at the federal level that reflect their views. I would also say that they should take a look at what's going on, again, I'm going to say this, here at the State House, and they'll see how many of the things that are really bothering them and that they care about, relating to income insecurity and transparency in government and things of that nature, are actually playing out right here in Massachusetts. And the problem is they don't know what's actually going on here, because we've been ineffective here at the State House in communicating what we're doing to really move the ball. We're the leading industry in the United States, the leading state in the United States for solar energy. Not only for installing solar energy, but for creating a solar energy industry. And the same thing with life sciences. We're number one in the country in life sciences research, and that benefits all of the people of the Commonwealth.
Right. Senator Rosenberg, I know we only have you for a couple more minutes, and I just want to focus for a second on a couple of the ballot questions that Massachusetts voters also had their say on yesterday, because they represent significant issues in the state. First of all, about ballot question four, which was about the legalization of recreational marijuana, it passed. You supported question four. So what are the first key things you think the legislature should do to prepare for legalization?
So that vote was totally predictable. If you look at the other states where recreational marijuana has been appearing on the ballot in recent years, it's been passing. And so we anticipated that, and that's why the Senate set up a special Senate committee. We sent members out to Colorado. They met with people from Colorado, Washington State, to learn how it's implemented in those states and the problems and the successes they may have been having. And so we are now ready to sit down and have a conversation about how to improve the bill, because there are issues in the report that these senators wrote that are completely unaddressed in the ballot question, and there are some of the issues that have been addressed in the ballot question that are not best practices based on what we've learned in the other states.
So specific issues in the report, such as, do you have an example?
So things like DUI, driving under the influence, the concentration of THC, that is the strength of the product. Should we have edibles, and if so, what kind? Packaging. So tax rate, is it sufficient to actually cover the cost?
Well, I just want to ask you about that, because it is the lowest of any state that's legalized marijuana.
Yes,
do you think the legislature is going to quickly push to increase that tax rate?
We have to at least cover the costs, and that those costs should not only be administration and enforcement of the law, it should also be for the research necessary to understand what the impacts on society are, as well as the costs associated with public safety and with addiction prevention and treatment. And the other states have gone beyond that and raised money for other causes. We should that will be on the table, and I think that's a fair question to ask.
Well, Stan Rosenberg is the president of the Massachusetts State Senate. He's a Democrat from Amherst. He joined us today from Beacon Hill. Senator Rosenberg, thank you so very much.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you.
Well, we are talking about yesterday's election and the path forward for America and the nation, for America and Massachusetts, I should say. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I see a lot of you are waiting in line to get on the air. We'll try to get to as many of you as possible after the break, but stick with us, and we'll be back in about 90 seconds. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are, of course, talking about last night's historic election and the election of Donald Trump as the 45th president of the United States. We're looking at the path forward for the United States, and especially what it means here in Massachusetts. And we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Give us a call. Have your say. And let's go hear from Mary, who's calling from Topsfield. You're on the air, Mary.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I am so excited. I'm happy, I'm jubilant, I'm hopeful, and I haven't felt like this since Ronald Reagan was elected. To all the people who are saying that Donald Trump doesn't have enough political experience, I think that the Democratic Party 8 years ago spoke and said they didn't want anyone with experience, and they went with a Barack Obama who didn't even have 2 years as a senator. And so I think this country is ready for change and to embrace it.
Well, Mary, I think a lot of the people in the exit polling that we've seen said they wanted someone who could create change, and Donald Trump was their man to do it. But what do you say to all those folks? We heard from some of them, your fellow Bay Staters, a little earlier this hour, who said that they're worried about a Trump presidency, and they might even feel frightened. What's your message for them?
Feel frightened. I mean, we went with an uncertainty with Barack Obama, and, you know, he was able to rally people. I think that, you know, the Republicans are sending a message. They don't want the status quo any more than the Democrats want the status quo. Running a business, this country is a business, and it's doing poorly. I mean, you don't want so many people out of work and unemployment. And I just don't understand why everyone's so fearful and afraid of him. I really just, it's very unfounded, very unfounded. I think in his speech last night, Donald Trump was very conciliatory. He was gracious,
yep.
And he was inviting and already reaching his hand out across the aisle.
Mary, thank you so very much for your call. It's much appreciated. Well, let's turn now to Vincent DeVito. He was co-chair of the Trump campaign in Massachusetts. He's partner at the Boston law firm Bowditch & Dewey. Vincent DeVito, welcome back to you.
Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm doing great. So, how are you feeling today on the heels of victory?
Oh, I'm feeling excited, of course. It was a long campaign. I was there from the beginning, and it was a long election day. Been through a few of those now, and the way this rolled out, I think, is terrific for the country.
Mm. And so what do you expect from Donald Trump in his first 100 days or even less in office? What do you think he's going to do?
Oh, I expect for him to perform exactly what he campaigned on to the American people, which is long on change, but not change in the sense of change for the sake of just doing it, but, you know, real change. You know, you're talking about tax reform, you're talking about trade reform, you're talking about immigration reform, you're talking about security interests, you're talking about American first policies, but at the same time, being open and fair to all the stakeholders. And that's not only an issue that he talked about last night. That's something that he's been talking about for the last 18 months. So you shouldn't expect anything other than what he has said. I mean, do not forget, he is not a politician. He is somebody who articulates things after he thinks about them, and he says it, he believes that he's going to be able to implement it.
Mm. We're seeing here that Donald Trump has said on the first day of his term in office, he's going to pursue several measures, including proposing a constitutional amendment to impose term limits on all members of Congress, a hiring freeze on all federal employees to reduce the federal workforce, a requirement that every new federal regulation and existing regulations two existing regulations must be eliminated. Also, he wants to introduce a lifetime ban on White House officials lobbying on behalf of foreign governments. So a slew of plans he has for day one. But then he says on the same day, he's going to renegotiate NAFTA or announce his intention to do so, his intention to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So it seems like a very ambitious and sweeping set of changes that he wants to bring in on day one.
Donald Trump was elected because he is ambitious and able to accomplish ambitious things. These are just not statements. They are goals. And quite frankly, I don't view them as terribly burdensome in terms of achievement. We're only talking about bricks and mortar reform here. Starting the review and possible reversing of trade policies is something that he said he's going to do, and that's going to happen. Starting some day one activities, as you itemized, are all very doable within the constitutional framework laid before us under executive order or executive memo. These directors have been broadly used. The people that came out and voted for President-elect Trump are very much excited about the fact that they believe he is going to deliver on the campaign promises that he gave to them. And they understand that he is a person that knows how to do things, surround himself yeah. with serious people that are able to not be afraid of trying to do things that are ambitious.
Well, let me take a call here. Mike is calling from Sudbury. You're on the air, Mike.
Hi, thank you. Let me in. I think we need to do some preemptive measures here. One of the things he said he was going to do is appeal of the Affordable Care Act. I think this state, to preempt that, should look into and proceed with a single-payer health system. So, because stealing health care from people is what the Republicans have been trying to do all along. They've been trying to put it in the hands of insurance companies, which lose money if they cover you, which is absurd in itself. But I think this state needs to do a preemptive measure and set up a vote and a possible raise taxes on the people that are can be raised on, as well as maybe add some toll booths or other highways in the state that would toll only out-of-state traffic.
Yeah. Mike, let me take it back from you, because we're going to, I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but we're going to run out of time with Vincent DeVito here. So, Vince DeVito, you heard Mike there talk about Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act. Obviously, President-elect Trump has spoken very critically of it, says it's the worst piece of legislation ever. He's presented in this plan he put out today, he says on the first day he's going to take an executive action to, quote, cancel every unconstitutional executive action, memorandum, and order issued by President Obama. I mean, there are people in Trump's inner circle talking about erasing, essentially, the legacy of President Obama's 8 years entirely as soon as they come into office. What would that mean for the 22 million Americans who did get health care under the Affordable Care Act? What would they have in instead?
Right. Well, let's face it. If it's a illegal executive order, it's, well, illegal, and so it should be reversed and undone. With regards to Obamacare, the premiums are being raised wildly. It's a huge issue in this campaign. And those that may be on it are going to suffer terribly. So it does need to be repealed and replaced. And in addition to that, the U.S. Congress has voted to repeal already Obamacare, something like on 20 occasions. So this is nothing new. And if you looked at the exit polls yesterday, it was certainly a driver for the election of President-elect Trump.
Yeah, I guess what I'm asking is 22 million Americans did get health care under Obamacare. What's going to happen to them if Obamacare is repealed? Replaced with what?
It will be replaced with a plan that would serve these people better than they're being served now, with these 100% increases on the premiums. I mean, how do people afford that?
Well, finally, Vincent DeVito, let me ask you, obviously you've heard throughout this hour, and I'm sure you've heard all day long, some people saying that they are deeply concerned about the nation as it moves forward under President-elect Trump's leadership. President Obama himself today talked about a coming together. So did Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump said it last night too. But I'm wondering, when you look at the divisions that this election seems to have shone a light on, when it comes to the Republican Party itself, we have the majority of white voters having voted for Donald Trump, a vast majority of minority voters having voted for Hillary Clinton. I mean, take a step back with me. Is the GOP under President-elect Trump a white nationalist party?
The Republican Party under President-elect Trump, matter of fact, the United States of America is going to be a much improved country. Donald Trump did not run on divisive issues. People may be concerned about certain issues particular to their unique interests, but the reality is,
Mr. DeVito, forgive me, I have to, but I just have to jump in here. He did run on divisive issues, and he won on them.
We all get unified on issues of growing the economy, getting more jobs, better health care, tax reform, trade reform. America First policy is a unifying policy.
So where do you think the Republican Party then is headed? It's got the White House, and it's also got Congress now.
I don't understand the question necessarily, but we have Congress and we have the White House and potentially the Supreme Court. So the American people decided that they want the Republican Party to be in charge of the government, and that's where we are. Where we take it from there is a unifying, grow the economy, and protect the country first approach.
Well, Vincent DeVito is co-chair of the Trump campaign in Massachusetts.
I am the chair.
Oh, you are the chair. Forgive me for the error. He's the chair of the Trump campaign in Massachusetts and a partner at Bowditch & Dewey. Thank you so very much for joining us today.
I greatly enjoyed it. Thank you.
Let's take another call here. Ahmed is calling from Pawtucket, Rhode Island. You're on the air.
Hi, Chuck. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's your thought?
I have a mix of emotions, fear, anger, disappointment. As a Muslim American, I don't think I'm really included in the U.S. and under President-elect. My main fear is for the future is any candidate can use a divisive and racist talk to make it mainstream, to make it into office.
Yeah.
Play in people's fear and worry of the other and what's next and become a president. I mean, President-elect is, it's official, but still, we don't know a lot of president-elect.
A lot of people have some uncertainty, definitely, around what kind of president Donald Trump is going to be. I take your point, Ahmed. Thank you very much. I want to slide another call in here. Marie is calling from Brighton. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, in my opinion, what happened is that it wasn't about race and it wasn't about sex, choosing a woman. It was about the people being tired of the lack of action from both sides of Senate. People were frustrated. They were upset. They were afraid about the status of our economy and our country, where we're going. And we saw that both Democrats and Republicans were not working together for our interest. The Republicans wanted to see the Democrats fail so they could get their chance. The Democrats refused to compromise, and so nothing got done.
We'll see if more can get done as we move forward into a new Congress and a new president as well. Marie, forgive me. I didn't mean to be rude, but I do want to turn to one last guest here before we run out of time, because there's unfinished business in New Hampshire. So joining us now is Trent Spinner. He's executive director of the Union Leader in Manchester, New Hampshire. Trent, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Do we know who the new, or if New Hampshire has a new senator yet?
It's going to be Maggie Hassan. At least that's what it looks like. There's been no recount ordered yet. This has been the most expensive race per capita in the country. And so it looks like Maggie Hassan squeaked it out with just about 1,000 votes.
Wow, so this is news now. Has it been confirmed by the New Hampshire Secretary of State?
It has been confirmed by the Secretary of State this afternoon. Because it's only about a 0.09 difference in between Maggie Hassan and Kelly Ayotte, Kelly Ayotte has the right to ask for a free recount, which we think might take 2 days, 3 days. She has not done that yet. So right now, Maggie Hassan is the presumptive winner. We have not heard from Kelly Ayotte about whether or not she wants a recount, but she also has not conceded the race yet. So I think there's a little bit more to go here.
Okay, so if she does, then we will have seen a flip in the New Hampshire Senate seat.
We will have seen a flip, yes. Okay. Kelly Ayotte was the Republican, longtime attorney general, pretty well known here. Maggie Hassan came in. She was the Democratic governor. It was a very difficult campaign. This was a brutal campaign. They spent about $125 million on this race. There are only 1.3 million people in the entire state. So just to put it in perspective, this was a big race.
Wow. And so New Hampshire's 4 electoral votes then, is that all wrapped up for Hillary Clinton or not? Not that it makes a difference now, but...
Not that it makes a difference, though. Last night we were looking at it and we were concerned that the entire nation was going to be mad at us one way or the other, because it looked like New Hampshire, depending on how Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania went, New Hampshire could have decided the entire presidential race. That didn't end up happening. It looks like Hillary Clinton won by just over 1,000 votes, maybe even less. So that is just incredible.
I mean, there in a nutshell, with both the Senate and presidential race in New Hampshire, I feel like is a microcosm of this American moment, don't you think?
Yes. You're talking about 750,000 people voting, and it comes down to hundreds of votes. It is like nothing I've ever seen before.
Well, Trent Spinner, he's with the New Hampshire Union Leader, giving us an update there on the New Hampshire Senate race. It looks like the winner is Maggie Hassan. Kelly Ayotte has yet to concede, so we'll see what happens as the day progresses. Trent, it's always great to talk with you. Thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, thank you for calling in today. Keep your calls coming as we continue to talk about the future of this country, the future of the state. Tomorrow, we're going to take a deeper look into the ballot questions that you all voted on yesterday. And we'll keep talking with each other. I think that's the best way forward for all of us. So stick with us on the Radio Boston family. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.